Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm Joe Mellage, and this is Skyline's The City Metric Podcast. I'm probably going to cough my way through this one. I have an absolutely stinking cold, and it's bloody freezing outside. So basically, I'm feeling really sorry for myself and can't be bothered to do anything. So I've cunningly dragged my colleague, our environmental writer, India Borkin, to kind of talk to me about the weather. Hello, India. How are you?
I'm good, actually. Although I think last time I came on, you were also sick. I hope it's not some weird coincidence.
Do I need to be worried about this? Are you like poisoning me in an effort to kind of steal my podcast and possibly my life? Is this?
I would love your life, but no.
Okay. Well, that's a fault that's going to fester. So yeah, as I say, I think in London right now it's the coldest week of the winter so far, which isn't saying that much because we don't tend to get particularly extreme weather here. But it's sort of bouncing around the freezing point, and there's a lot of coldness out there, isn't there? Isn't it cold? Isn't it a
so
cold
much
world
cold? Coldness out there, coldness in the office, coldness in my house, particularly. a lot of cold, which is appropriate because
one place that is particularly cold at the moment is
South Korea.
I was really hoping you were going to do the heavy lifting of pronouncing Pyeongchang.
Pyeongchang.
Okay.
Let's go with that.
Okay. Which is where we've just had the opening ceremony for the Winter Olympics.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. So we've not had it. This is kind of a measure of quite how much attention that I'm paying to the world of sports.
Are you a winter sports fan, John?
I'm not really. No. I mean, So here's my thing. I've often quite liked the idea of skiing, but not the skiing part.
Like, What do you mean?
Well, like the idea
what part of skiing?
The
does
idea
not involve
of
skiing.
Being in a snowy mountain. This is
the
after ski. No, the chairlift's frightened me. No, but like the bit where you're kind of in a snowy mountain village and there's a roaring fire and
some fondue.
No, the cheese. Oh, the cheese. But hot chocolate and hot booze, that I can get behind.
Fair enough.
So that stuff has always sounded very appealing to me, but it feels like it would be quite self-indulgent to go on a holiday to have those things without doing the sort of skiing part. So I've just never done it. Are you a winter sports person?
I love watching the Olympic Winter Games. From when I was little, I loved the ice skating, dancing, both of them, all of them.
Were you bitten by a radioactive Torvill or Dean as a child?
Oh, I remember Torvill and Dean. Icons. But no, I love all of it. The crazy downhill racing, the slaloms, the jumps. How do they throw themselves off that jump? I do not know.
So is that the appeal? The sort of the unspoken possibility that something horrible might happen?
Oh, I'm actually writing about that this week. About fear.
You're writing about how much pleasure you get out of watching horrible things happen to people on mountainsides.
not quite. That's a different thing. But I think that the fear factor is certainly part of the Winter Games appeal. And obviously being in South Korea this year with the looming threat of much bigger fears, obviously nuclear war, but also more in my territory, climate change. You know, there's a lot to be more nervous about than usual, maybe.
So just before, I mean, we're mostly going to talk about weather, but before we get into that, like something I hadn't appreciated till recently about Korean geography is that Seoul, which is, I think it's the second biggest conurbation in the world, it's certainly up there. It's like about 20 million people. It's an enormous population. And they're only about 15 kilometres from the demilitarised zone. It's really, really very close to the border with a country with a very dodgy regime that has nuclear weapons and kind of wants to kill them.
Yeah.
And I found that terrible. I mean, that's like having that's like having a sort of nuclear armed enemies of London's population in Southend or something, which is a bit that's baffling that people can just go about their daily lives like that.
Well, it is, and that's what people do. But that's one of the reasons the games is going to be so special this year, is that the North Koreans and South Koreans are competing on the same hockey team. There's a North Korean figure skating pair who are hoping to do quite well. And it's actually a really lovely atmosphere, considering, you know, the wider context has not been so great recently.
Actually, this is something I can get behind, is like, I don't really get sport at all. Like, I'm missing whatever gene it is that makes you a proper boy that cares about things like this. But something I do quite like is the kind of political aspects to it. So like,
exactly.
I found it like during the 2012 London Olympics, there's a display you get at the beginning when like, all the teams come out. Like, I found it very interesting watching which national teams were getting cheered by the London Stadium audience. And generally speaking, like, European ones did pretty well. The Americans and Australians got a big cheer. The Indians got a big cheer. And occasionally, and then, I just found it kind of interesting to see, like, which nations people are saying they like.
You like the Eurovision side of the Olympics, then?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I shouldn't, but I do kind of love Eurovision, just because it's, like, it's just a really great excuse to get drunk and send sarcastic tweets, and that's really all I want out of life.
Well, to segue back onto weather.
Weather, yes.
When they come into the opening, into the stadium tomorrow, it's going to be exceptionally cold. So cold, they are handing out warm, like, heated blankets. The US team are turning up in coats that somehow have heaters inside them.
That's amazing.
Just, you know, cross your fingers no one catches fire. So part of the problem is that because they're tearing down the stadium after the games, they've not put a roof, quite sensibly, you know, haven't put too much money in there or built a roof over or anything, so it's going to be very cold. But also, South Korea is having an exceptionally cold winter right now.
So how cold are we talking? Like, can you give us numbers?
In daytime, I think it's been hovering around -5 degrees Celsius, but it's the wind factor, the wind chill factor, that's really making it just feel like the Arctic. I mean, the competitors are complaining all over the shop on Twitter. There's even reports that some of the skis have had to be thrown out because they're warping, because the snow is so cold.
That feels like a design flaw to me, like skis that can be damaged by cold weather.
I know. I mean, mostly in recent years with the Olympics, we're used to hearing the problem of there not being enough snow. And in Sochi in Russia last time, it was too warm, everything was melting. This year it's too cold, although actually there hasn't been much snow either, so the snow cannons may still be having to produce a load of artificial stuff. The general like climate change trends are not boding well for the concept of the Winter Olympic Games.
So yeah, according to these notes, which you very efficiently put together for me because I'm too lazy to do my own research, it's about -20 degrees Celsius at night in Pyeongchang at the moment. Which is, I mean, I was just complaining about how cold it is in London now. I just checked, it's about 7 degrees out. That's like, and that I'm not enjoying that very much. So like, -20, that's insane.
I must have read that somewhere if I put it in the notes. Yeah. But what I read most recently was the coldest Olympic Games on record is -11 degrees. And it's not that at the minute, but it is the wind chill factor that is making it feel like... like it's a lot colder.
So it feels like there's
even the Canadians are complaining.
Yeah. Oh, or do you want my favourite Canada fact?
Which always,
I've just been hoping to sneak in somewhere. So more than half the population of Canada lives south of Milan. Like, we think of Canada as this kind of northern country, but most of its population lives like about on a level with northern Italy.
I'm just trying to do like the geographical gymnastics in my head to work
that
out.
It's
that doesn't
it's
make
like,
any sense. Canada's above us. We're above Italy.
No, Canada is not above us. This is it. It's the Gulf Stream. Like, okay. Europe is freakishly temperate for somewhere this far north.
Yes, I do.
So like, New York City is about on a level with Madrid, which is like southern Europe. But it's like, even though Canada is huge and goes like all the way to the Arctic, its two biggest cities are Toronto and Montreal, which are both in the kind of southern bit that sort of dips into being level with the northern United States. So half the population is in kind of that bit that's very close to the US border, which is actually about on the level with southern France, northern Italy. I just find that kind of mind-blowing.
It is, yeah. Well, the Gulf Stream is also pretty mind-blowing, which might actually be part of the explanation for why it's so cold at the minute.
So where else is it cold? I hear there are other places that are cold, according to these notes.
Moscow is very cold. Moscow's had a load of snow, like a lot of snow.
Is that not normal? You kind of like, Moscow is pretty snowy, isn't it? That's a thing?
Yeah, well, according to all the films I watched about it, it's pretty snowy. But they've had so much snow, I can't remember what the exact fact is. It's something like 3 months in 24 hours, was that it?
I don't know. Whoever compiled these notes didn't see fit to include that. But that sounds crazy.
Heaviest right? in 100 years. That was it. Heaviest in 100 years, and it's really kind of messing up the city for somewhere that you would think is used to snow. It's just the armies had to come in to help out. Power lines collapsed and sadly killed someone. It's not for somewhere that it is meant to be used to snow. They are struggling a bit.
So what I'm taking from all this is that global warming is a myth. And that we don't need to... Global cooling, that's our problem. We don't need to... Like, Donald Trump was right, right?
In the words of Trump, there is a cooling and there is a heating. As he told Piers Morgan in Davos the other day. The problem is that most places are getting warmer. So 2017 was the hottest year on record without an El Nino after, you know, many, many years where it's just been getting hotter and hotter. In the UK, the Met Office says that 2003's record summer, where it was 38 degrees Celsius, that will be the norm by 2040 on like medium level forecasts of climate change.
That was hot. A lot of people died. It's kind of... It was old people dying of dehydration. It wasn't like people like literally bursting into flames. So like, I'm really not explaining this well. but what I'm getting at is like, you know, deaths from extreme weather. It's kind of an exaggeration of deaths that happen all the time, right? So like January, an enormous number of older people die in January because they die of other conditions, but it's exacerbated by the cold weather.
Yeah.
And it's a similar thing with like extreme heat, right?
Absolutely. And while as a global phenomenon, it's getting warmer, some places are getting colder, and that, to track back to our jet stream, is related to how those kind of currents work. So the jet stream works. It usually stays quite stable so it's kind of conditioned by two things: the very cold Arctic, but in the north. And then the warmer temperatures of the south.
So, sorry, can we take this back a level? What exactly is the jet stream?
It's a load of winds that go from west to east, all the way around the globe.
Okay, gotcha.
And those, I'm no scientist, but I believe those blow stronger when the difference between the cold Arctic and the warm tropics is greater. So that's like more steady, and it keeps them more separate. But when the difference between the cold and the warm temperatures is smaller, the jet stream gets weaker and it starts to get kinky and bend. And when it starts to bend, then the cold Arctic air can dip down into more southern, like more normally warmer temperatures or climates. So someone called Jennifer Francis from the University of Rutgers, she's argued that the loss of so much sea ice cover in the Arctic in just 30 years, that means that temperatures in the Arctic are warmer, which means the difference between the cold and the warm temperatures is less. Am I losing you? I can see your eyes glazing over.
No, this is really interesting. Sorry, I'm just trying to think of what to say.
I know.
I'm going to have to say something clever in response to this in a second. I'm just planning ahead. So less ice cover means, I think I'm right in saying it's less... The ice cover reflects heat back, right? So, like, if you have a lot of ice cover, it's cooler because you're literally reflecting the sunlight back. It's the albedo effect. Is that the thing?
The less ice essentially means the warmer the Arctic is.
Yeah. but it's a reinforcing. Mm. That's not just a symptom. That's a cause. Mm, is the point. Mm, like, mm. So like once yeah. once you lose ice, like it gets warmer.
Yeah, yeah. So the Arctic's warming, which means it's the temperatures there are. I mean, they're still much colder, but they are relatively similar to the warmer southern tropical temperatures. Which means the jet stream's weaker. Which means it starts to do more unusual things that are harder to predict. So the science around this is still in debate, still being studied, they're still getting results for it. But that is a factor in why it's so cold at the Olympic Games right now.
So in the longer term, is there a danger we could lose the Gulf Stream altogether?
Wow.
Because because as we were sort of touching on, like, Europe is actually a lot more temperate than places. Like South Korea is also a long way south of Europe, right?
Mm.
Or like it's level with southern Europe or something. But like somewhere like the UK, if you kind of like go directly east or west from it, you're generally sort of tracking through some pretty cold places in Canada or Siberia.
Mm, mm, mm.
And it's kind of weird that we get such warm, gentle weather as we do. And that's because of the Gulf Stream.
Mm, mm.
Is climate change going to do something horrible to Europe's climate by kind of killing that? Is that a thing?
According to that horror movie, what's it called? Not horror movie.
The Day After Tomorrow.
According to The Day After Tomorrow, yes. People have written about that a bit, and it's a factor. It will have an effect, but there's a couple of factors that kind of will be working in concert, which I can't remember off the top of my head.
But I guess the point is, it's a complex system, and like we don't really know some of this stuff, right? Like, you can tell it's going to have all sorts of unknown effects, but it's actually quite difficult to work out all these different...
The global weather is certainly a complex system,
yeah.
But there are definite trends that scientists have already, read into that for certain. And one of those is that, the global temperature is going up, and weather of all kinds, including cold temperatures, is becoming more unpredictable and more extreme.
It's also worth saying at this point that while we've been talking about how cold it is in the Northern Hemisphere, in the Southern Hemisphere, which is obviously in high summer at the moment, it's pretty damn hot as well, isn't it? So, like, I mean...
It is.
What's going on in Cape Town?
Right? So, Cape Town is... Everyone's waiting for this approaching day zero, which sounds very Day After Tomorrow-ish. And the date for it keeps changing, but I think the latest is it's scheduled to be May 11th, and on May the 11th, Cape Town's going to run out of water. It's not going to totally run out of water. It means that dam storage, so the amount of water in the dams, is going to reach 13.5%, which is kind of so low that there's just not going to be enough for the city to function like a normal city. So on the one hand, you're kind of like, no one's going to like not have any water to drink, but actually this is massive and just is unprecedented.
So what does that mean? I mean, presumably, like, it's activities that require a lot of water, like, baths or car washes or whatever, get banned or something? I don't know.
There was already loads of measures in place. People are being asked to, massively conserve water. They've created a song that you can sing it's a 2-minute long song, and that's the amount of time you're meant to spend in the shower.
Would you like to give us a rendition of the song?
I haven't heard it, so sadly.
Okay, well, that was worth a try. Stephanie once managed to get me to sing the Only Fools and Horses theme tune on this podcast, and I've been hoping to take my revenge on someone ever since.
Oh, I think I escaped this time. Yeah. But, so also it's going to obviously affect rich areas much more than poor areas. A quarter of Cape Town's population already only use 4.5% of the water, and most of that is from communal taps. So this is going to, in terms of having to change their lifestyle, this is going to hit the people who have swimming pools and water their lawns and wash their cars every week.
It's the rich people.
It's a tale of two cities as well.
Yeah,
yes, sure. but everyone will be impacted. What's interesting in Cape Town is there a bit of a debate has arisen as to why the water's got so low. Obviously, there's been a drought, like an ongoing drought for a couple of years. But some people say, well, the population's also risen, which has put more pressure on the water resources. You know, agriculture hasn't been being managed well. There's all these new invasive species. Like, so a while ago, they planted loads of pine forests because that was good for the timber industry. But no one really thought through the fact that pine trees use a lot of water more than native species. So that's had an impact. And then there's a whole debate about kind of political mismanagement because Cape Town is run by the opposition party, the Democratic Alliance, whereas the African National Congress runs the rest of the country. So there's a whole load of conversation about that the national government wasn't pulling their weight in responding to the crisis early enough. But saying all that, someone called Pietro, I definitely can't pronounce this, Pietro Wolski, a water scientist at the University of Cape Town, yeah, he studied the kind of trends of the drought and compared it to past rainfall, and he says it's a 1 in 300 year event, and this trend, but there's also a trend towards lower rainfall over the past 84 years, and that, you know, could be tied to climate change.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So we're going to get back to the weather in a second, but just before we do, a little bit of housekeeping. Excitingly, or excitingly if you're me anyway, I can't speak for the audience, in a couple of weeks, Skylines is going to be doing its first ever live show. We'll be doing that... I say we, it's really me. I'll be doing that at the New Local Government Network's annual conference in London's Guildhall on Thursday, the 22nd of February. It is a ticketed conference, so sadly you can't just swing by without sticking your hand in your pocket. And it's I'm not going to lie, the tickets are not that cheap. I don't think people are paying for these tickets specifically to come and watch me podcast, alas. But if you are going to be at the NLGN conference, then yeah, pop along. It'd be good to see you. So, what are cities doing about all this? I mean, like, cities can't magically address the climate problem. I mean, they can do their bit, but, like, they can't sort of suddenly fix things. But what can cities do to kind of cope with these sudden changes in weather?
So cities have started doing something extremely exciting. I realize as I say extremely exciting, that sounds incredibly geeky. But
no, this podcast is a safe space. You're allowed to be excited about urban resilience policies.
So I just think it's fascinating that cities are the ones, the government, city governments, not national governments, not international governments, well, maybe international governments with the climate change treaty, but it's city governments that are the ones actually suing fossil fuel companies. I mean, that's a huge thing to do. I mean, just think of, like, the tobacco industry and how that was, you know, litigated against and, you know, finally kind of exposed. And it's city mayors and city governments who are the ones taking this on now.
So which cities are doing this? I've missed this story.
So last month, New York made a big splash by coming out and saying, right, Bill de Blasio, the mayor, said, right, we're going to launch a lawsuit against the five largest fossil fuel producers, publicly listed fossil fuel producers. So that's BP, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Shell and ExxonMobil, I think. And they said, right, we're going to sue them because climate change is causing us a hell of a headache and we're going to have to spend so much money. They've already kind of been adapting the city, you know, creating parks by the water so there's kind of to mitigate flood risk. Obviously, Hurricane Sandy caused so much damage. And yeah,
there's those shocking pictures of like metro subway stations literally underwater.
Yeah, I know. I went to New York a few years after Hurricane Sandy, and I still feel like they haven't totally cleaned up the subway. And you know that those kinds of events, climate science proves that they are more likely to happen again. And it's they've just gone, sorry guys, this is caused by you, and you knew about this before, you know, a long time ago, and you didn't change your ways.
So as we record, it's Thursday the 9th of February. What's the state of this? What's happening with this lawsuit? What stage is it at?
So they filed the lawsuit and other places have followed them in doing that. Then they weren't the first. San Francisco and a couple of other local governments in California had already done this. So New York wasn't the first, but it's looks like it's certainly not going to be the last. And actually, just a few days ago, the mayor of Paris, Anne Hidalgo, an kind of activist environmental organization called 350, reported that Paris is also looking into the possibility of launching such a legal suit.
Could London do something similar, or is it like British cities don't have the same kind of powers as a lot of international cities is the first question in my mind. I don't know if this is something that Sadiq Khan actually has the ability to do. Do we know anything about that?
It's something I really am keen to look more into. Obviously, it's not something that's being talked about at all as a possibility. In fact, the kind of other thing that New York has announced and a lot of other cities announced is, you know, a really big push to divest city pension funds from fossil fuel companies. Now, Sadiq Khan has also said that London is doing this, but so far it's only sold off about half of its fossil fuel assets, which many people don't think is nearly enough. And so it's kind of there's a bit feeling like London's on the back foot of all of this at the minute. So yeah, Sadiq Khan needs to come up with something special soon.
Well, there's something to think about. I would like to end this podcast on a slightly happier note. Not happier in the sense of solving the climate crisis. Obviously, we can't do anything about that. But happier in the sense of me actually knowing things and asking you questions. And see it. And because frankly,
tell you about being cold. My heart's just like chilled with, oh no, I'm going to be tested.
I've just been sat here the whole thing. I know nothing about any of this. But now I've got the answers to these questions, so I'm going to do a little quiz for you, a little temperature quiz. What is the hottest city in the world, do you think?
Okay, so I have no idea, but I enjoy guessing.
Go on, give us a guess.
Hottest city in the world.
I'll give you a clue.
Yeah, continent.
It's not London.
Thanks, John.
Okay.
Although this podcasting room is pretty hot right now. Yeah.
probably Asia is probably the continent.
What do you mean probably? Cities don't. Well, there's actually, no city that's in two continents.
Okay. Well, you say this, but hang on. Istanbul is a city that is very clearly in two continents.
All right.
So,
is it Istanbul?
Yeah. No, it's not Istanbul. It's that like it kind as so often on city metric related content. It depends how you count. the sort of city that's kind of hottest on average, as in like, you know, if you just look at its temperature across the whole year, seems to be Bangkok.
Mm-hmm.
Because although it's the highs are not the world's highest, it never really cools down. It doesn't get colder. Mm. It doesn't cool down at night. It doesn't get cold in winter. So its average temperature is probably around 30 degrees C, which is unusual.
Nice.
But in terms of which cities get the record highs, like which cities get the highest temperatures, it's probably a Middle Eastern city, possibly Kuwait city, where you get over 50 degrees sometimes. Gosh. Which is crazy.
It's unbearable.
Okay, can you make a guess at coldest city in the world?
somewhere in like Iceland?
No, you kind of. I mean,
Canada? Somewhere in Canada?
No, keep.
Somewhere in Russia?
Yes, I knew you'd get there in the end.
Somewhere in Siberia?
Yeah, probably. Again, it's slightly different depending on which measure you're taking, but it'll be a Russian city. Very close to the Arctic Circle, possibly just inside it. There's Norilsk.
Seriously, we're all going to have to start learning the names of these, you know, extremely northern news? Russian cities. I think we're all going to be moving there.
Oh, well. Okay,
I mean, that's a bit much. But what I mean is that, you know, the Arctic is warming and Russia and China, you know, well, Russia particularly is developing all these cities at a pace, really. And, you know, moving people there, even though it's still incredibly cold at the minute, but they're really planning ahead.
So as it stands, the city of Yakutsk, which is about the size of Derby, so not tiny, that's got an average temperature of about -9. But that's been growing pretty quickly.
Yeah,
that was, you know, it's only recently become the size of Derby. It used to be a lot smaller than Derby.
Exactly. If the Arctic becomes, you know, this massive shipping route, going to be a lot of money to be made in all these cities.
Well, maybe that's where the jobs are going
shipping
to be
shipping and extraction and, you know, mining and everything.
The coldest city that you're likely to have actually heard of is probably Ulaanbaatar, the capital of Mongolia.
What a beautiful name for a city.
Where in January the daily mean can be as low as -20, but it does, you know, it does at least get a summer, unlike, you know, Yakutsk, which I think I've pronounced two or three different ways by now. Okay, just with me, what do you reckon is the coldest temperature ever recorded in the UK?
Not including wind chill.
I don't know. I'm assuming not. Probably not.
Maybe like -15?
Apparently the single coldest is -27.
Wow.
Which was summer in
Scotland.
As you'd expect, most of the coldest temperatures have been in Scotland, although confusingly a couple of them are in the Midlands. I don't know why we skipped the north.
It's probably like -15 in Scotland today. I don't know why. That was a terrible answer. Terrible guess.
And what about, okay, just to complete this out, what do you reckon the record high is?
Like 40?
Not bad. 38.5 in Faversham, which is in Kent, just outside London.
Was that 2003?
That was 2003. Yeah. That was that crazily hot summer of 2003.
Yeah.
Which I quite liked. I really liked the crazy hot summer.
I don't remember it. What happened?
You're not that young. Surely you can, like, you must have been, what, 16?
Pre-uni, yeah.
I was already living in London. It was like, I kind of like London in the hot weather. It's like...
I think it must have been around the time of GCSEs in which... Nothing else is remembered apart from...
Yeah, your mind is on other things. But yeah, no, I like the way London sort of wakes up when the sun comes out and like in any patch of greenery is suddenly covered in people lounging around drinking beer. And I kind of respect
Look at
that.
Us reminiscing about how you... those were the days.
I mean, we're always going to be doing that. It's going to be like, you know,
it's only going to get
Do you
worse.
Remember rain? Do you remember when we used to get rain? Yeah. Anyway, we'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.